You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
We're right at the bottom of the hour here on this Friday, November 11th, Veterans Day, also feast day of St. Martin of Tours. Of course, it's been a big week and certainly on the political scene, and been blessed to be able to catch up here with Timothy Stanley. Tim is an English blogger, journalist, and historian. Does great work. You can read his writing in The Telegraph. He's been in the Catholic Herald. He's certainly been both in print and on video with CNN, and we're pleased to have him. He's been following the Trump campaign around. And Timothy, good morning.
Good morning to you. Hello.
What are you in D.C.? Is that where you currently are?
I'm currently in Washington, D.C., yes.
Wow. And here for the time being until you're called back, evidently.
I was supposed to go home the day after the election, but the newspaper said stay there. What's interesting is that if Hillary Clinton had won, I would have gone home because no one would have cared and life would have continued as normal. But because Trump won, that's newsworthy enough to keep me here. So that tells you what Europe thinks about the election.
I can't help. You know, a lot of people have made the parallels in terms of shocking election results, comparing Trump's victory with the Brexit vote in your native England. Maybe compare, contrast the two.
It's actually not the first surprise election result that I've covered as a journalist. I also covered the British general election in 2015, when again, polls suggested that the left-wing Labour Party was going to be able to form a government. And instead, the Tories won quite handily. Then we had Brexit, where again, we were told that Remain, the side that wanted to stay in the EU, was going to win and probably win quite easily. I'd personally predicted that they would win something like 60-40. In the end, they ended up winning about 52-48. Leave won 52-48. It was a huge surprise. It seems that polling is either bad, or people are lying to pollsters, or the wrong people are being sampled. It's difficult to tell exactly why polling has gotten it so wrong in the last couple of years. But my suspicion is that we are witnessing a social and political change taking place across the Western world. And polling hasn't quite caught up, that people are using models and using the wrong models, speaking to the wrong people. And they're failing to capture something subtle but big. A huge global change of mind and opinion. And this election has confirmed it. And I, for one, will never trust polls again. And instead, I promise that I will now actually base my predictions upon what I actually personally see. And I saw the enthusiasm at the Trump rallies, but I still convinced myself, because the polls said that the rest of the states didn't want it, I still convinced myself that it didn't count for anything. But it turns out, actually, that kind of grassroots enthusiasm matters.
And how would you, I mean, if you had to sum up what this social upheaval or what this movement is about that's across continents even, what would you say? What are the common threads?
And they're all about identity. It's a revolution in identity. Since the 1990s, we have bought into a model not just of global capitalism, but also of social liberalism. And the idea that nation states matter less, that gender matters less, that class matters less, and that where you're born and your country and even your ethnicity matters less. And I think that was in part accurate. I think many of those things did change and fade away. But also it was that's an ideology which has been framed by certain interest groups and encouraged and has become an orthodoxy. And that's changed. It turns out that people faced with the credit crunch, faced with the economic crisis the last few years, faced with the Iraq war, people have gone back to identity, back to gender, religion, ethnicity. All these things are really important again. And that's why the liberal media, liberal politicians, liberal businessmen are slightly behind the rest of the world because they're really talking a completely different language from ordinary people who are reasserting their sense of identity. I think that's what happened in Brexit, and that's what's happened with Trump. People have said, you know what, I'm American, I'm conservative, I'm religious, whatever, and I don't like the social order, and they rebelled against it.
Hmm. Now, you're a historian. That's not my wheelhouse, but I'm familiar with, a point of view that has maybe fallen out of favor, the great man theory, you know, of history. How would you lay that grid over this Trump election? I mean, was Trump simply the circumstance that gave voice to this movement, and it really could have been anybody, or is it in a sense the both and?
It's both and. The movement was taking place without him. The world was shifting to the right as it was. Again, it's rather surprising that people factored this out, but people forget that in 2014, the Republicans did very well in the midterm elections. And also, the election was partly just a rational response to Obama's failures. So in a sense, the country was going to move to the right anyway. But I do think that Trump rewrote the rules of how you run a presidential campaign. It required someone with his degree of shamelessness to win the primaries on this kind of identity platform. And then it required someone with his degree of shamelessness to take on the Clinton machine and win the general election. He did things that no other Republican candidate would do, such as calling Hillary Clinton directly to her face a liar and saying that her husband was an abuser of women and saying that he would lock her up, and saying that if he won, she'd be in jail. These are things no Republican would do, but actually they're things that ordinary Americans all think. For too long, politics has operated in this very polite, refined way of people skirting around what people really think. The genius of Donald Trump was simply to say what people think. And, you know, a lot of the time you don't want leaders who say what people think because people do sometimes think dumb things. But in this instance, Hillary Clinton was an exhausted political figure. She should have dropped out of electoral politics 8 years ago, but she kept on going, in part because politicians gave her a free pass. And Trump, in essence, said to her, why are you still here? Why are you still in the game? And no one else would have said that. And that's one of the reasons why he won.
It's, I was talking with some friends yesterday. What an amazing two or three days in terms of what was expected, not just in this election, but there was a sense in which this was the age of the Democrats. I mean, they were going to have the White House. They were going to have possibly the Senate. The Republican Party was in disarray because of all the divisions. And the Republican Party, how are they going to even still have a place at the table? And now the Democrats have none of them. And there are open questions about their future, and the Republican Party seems ascendant.
Yes, here's the other thing that we got wrong. As well as missing the rise of the right wing, we also overestimated the power of the left. The left in the last 10 years built a coalition of young people, women, gays, blacks, Latinos. And because they were demographically growing in the population, we assumed that coalition was unbeatable and that coalition was what had put Obama in the White House. Looking at the results that we've been looking at for the last couple of days, it looks like actually the outlier was Barack Obama. People voted for Barack Obama because they liked Barack Obama, not because they were liberal or because they were part of this coalition. Once you took Barack Obama off the ballot, the coalition just faded away. And about 6-7 million Democrats just didn't come to the polls. That's really what won this election turnout. Conservatives did turn up, liberals didn't. So we're going to have to rethink that. That liberal coalition, it turns out, is not indomitable. It's not inevitable, and it can be beaten. And in fact, all along, really, it was about Barack Obama. It wasn't about the left. The left is not popular, and I would not want to be a left-wing retail politician right now because you've got a real struggle on your hands.
Yeah, as bad as this election was for the Democrats and for Hillary Clinton, I mean, even worse, really, for the president. I mean, in terms of his legacy, because in many ways it was a repudiation.
It absolutely was, and one of the sleeper issues, which got minimal coverage, was Obamacare. And I felt that as soon as I arrived in the country, and particularly I felt it in the last week when the Obamacare hikes kicked in, when the cost of premiums suddenly shot up for some people. You know, in Arizona, the cost of Obamacare premiums doubled. I was surprised this was underreported. It was underreported because people were focusing on the email scandal. They were focusing on Trump's issues with women, things like that. But actually, it turns out Obamacare, not popular with most voters. Popular with the people who've been given insurance for the first time. Not popular for people who've had to pick up the costs of other people being given insurance by having their premiums go up in order to pay for the long-term conditions of other people. So, again, this is partly about identity, but this is also partly about a rational response to the last 8 years. Barack Obama decided to throw everything into Clinton and to help turn the election into a referendum on him. He framed it that way, too. He got Clinton to say this was about protecting his legacy. That's how they thought they would get blacks and Latinos and women out to the polls. That was a huge risk on his part, and it backfired. He helped turn this into a referendum on him, and he lost that referendum. Mm.
So, Tim, are you able to hold on for a few minutes on the other side of the break?
Yes, of course.
Oh,
yeah.
Fantastic, because I really want to continue this conversation. I want to get you to help me where I need help about my concerns regarding the future, because you've written, you know, you've given me some hope about the future of the Trump presidency. So we'll talk about it on this other break. Back with Tim Stanley, British author, historian, journalist, here on the Mike Allen Show. If you've got a question, 573-4BREAD-4. We'll be back in just a minute. This is Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Friday, November 11th, here with Tim Stanley, who is a British author, journalist, historian, lead writer for the Daily Telegraph, CNN Opinion, and contributing editor for the Catholic Herald. We're talking about the surprising Trump victory. Tim Stanley followed Mr. Trump around in the last several days of his campaign. Must have been a pretty whirlwind tour.
It was. Although, actually, I stuck to the East Coast. I just did North Carolina and Pennsylvania and Virginia. I actually managed to limit it to just a few states.
Yeah, I saw some of your pictures on Twitter. Got to see some interesting sights. The Harper's Ferry, for example.
That's right. Yes, I was. My friend very kindly agreed to actually drive me up to Pittsburgh, and we went up through Maryland and West Pennsylvania, somewhere I've never seen, some of the most beautiful countryside in the world.
We got a question here from a listener. She writes, if this vote was a referendum on Obama, if you look at popular vote, Clinton won. Does this mean that the nation as a whole favors democratic liberal principles and the job that Obama did? Isn't this something that Trump must consider when taking actions on policies he has promised, such as Obamacare?
That's a very, very good point. And something that tends to get forgotten, that Clinton did actually win the popular vote. Of course, constitutionally, it doesn't matter. What matters is that you carry as many states rather than as many people as possible, because this is a union of states rather than a popular democracy. But having said that, that is a very good point. The way I would answer that is, given everything Trump was up against, to win even without quite winning the popular vote is a landslide. It's the same with Brexit. Although Brexit actually only won by a couple of percentage points, because it was up against the entire weight of global opinion, British opinion, economics, et cetera, because it won at all, that was treated as a landslide victory. So I think you have to contextualize his win. And given what he's up against, I think you have to accept that it does signify something. going on. But no, the country is, of course, divided in two. Of course, it's divided in two. But it's just that we thought up until now that the Liberal coalition was much bigger than the Conservative reaction, and we were wrong.
Talk about your experience at the – you wrote about it in the Telegraph, and I posted a link to it on the show's Facebook page and on Twitter, your night at the Trump victory party. That must have been quite – was there a very palpable shift in mood that happened over the course of the first few hours?
Oh, absolutely. We in the press thought we'd be going to bed at midnight. We assumed that the election would be over by about 10, there'd be a concession by about 11, and that we could all then go home. And then I was supposed to get on a plane the next day. So the press were in a pretty good mood. The Trump people were in a pretty bad mood because they thought they were losing, because that's what the exit polls were suggesting. And the first few exit polls that came out showed women voting by big numbers, and they showed Clinton heading towards an easy win. So the mood was very, very poor. There's also very few people there. And they were quite an eclectic and strange mix of people. It was a mix of wealthy New York socialite women in evening wear and teenage boys in caps and blazers and greased hair trying to look like Trump. It was just it reminded me of a wedding party. It didn't feel like a political party. But then suddenly Florida was very close. And then he started to pick up votes in Michigan and Pennsylvania. The ballroom filled up. The energy was fantastic. They were absolutely over the moon. The Trump people, as far as they were concerned, they had won. They were thrilled. The press people, by contrast, were really dispirited and depressed. I mean, you know, 90% of the people in the press room, I would assume, voted Hillary Clinton. And there was, between us, running around the sides of the room was a metal barrier to keep the press from the delegates. And the Trump people were actually quite they were quite reluctant to let us speak to the party people. And it just created this extraordinary literal and figurative divide between the press and the people. We were all penned in, depressed. And then just over the other side of the metal barrier were all the people who were thrilled. And that to me said so much about this election and why the reporting on it went wrong. That reporters were just so instinctively opposed to Trump that they couldn't see the victory coming. Mm. And then when it did come, he emerged at the balcony and walked around the side of the room and down towards the podium. It was remarkable. I'd never felt anything like it. It's unlike any election I've ever known. A real feeling that regardless of the man and what you think about the man, that this is real history in the sense that it actually changes something in the way a Romney victory wouldn't have done. And to be there and witness that was incredible.
You know, we talked a little bit off air. I told you, you know, and we talked on the program before about how I, as a Catholic, I could not bring myself to a place in my conscience where I could vote for either candidate. I mean, I certainly opposed Hillary Clinton and particularly her, you know, her pro-abortion agenda, which is the strongest of any candidate probably in American history. Certainly concerns about religious freedom, Supreme Court. But Trump, in my view, had been such a moral disaster on so many levels, tapped into and fomented such ugly nativist strains and misogynistic stuff. I just couldn't bring myself to vote for him. So my reaction when the thing unfolded at first was, yes, Hillary lost. Then it was, oh, no, we've elected Trump. I've tried to get some friends to help me not be too despondent. Because my concern is not so much for the man himself, but I think he's a showman in many ways. My concern is that he's tapped into things, you know, ugly strains of scapegoating and nativism that he will not have the power to control. And for people that I know who are immigrants, you know, people that I know who are of color, I think their fears are real and I don't think they're irrational.
Yeah, I agree with that. A lot of people will have voted for Trump because they're racists or they're misogynists, in the same way that a lot of people voted for Brexit because they don't like foreigners. And I supported Brexit. And rationalizing that to yourself is very difficult. It does test your conscience. I'd be a moral simpleton if I didn't think if I wasn't concerned about the fact that I argued for something that racists support. Likewise, there's no denying that there are members of the Ku Klux Klan or former Grand Wizards who support Trump. there are dreadful misogynists who support Trump. And I understand people's concerns. All I would say is that, first of all, the moment you stop being a candidate and you become the president, there's a kind of a magical spell that's cast. And that was obvious at the White House yesterday. I went and covered Trump's first meeting with Obama. And just something about being in the White House changes the way people behave and the way they think about themselves. And you can visibly see that Trump has already graduated from a rebel outsider to president of the United States. And that's going to mean that he changes his tone. I also hope that some of that hypocrisy in Trump becomes apparent, because we were told that whatever he might say publicly, he's actually very good at hiring women. He's actually not a racist. I hope that we see some of that, and he's got to articulate that. And I also hope there are people around him who recognize that that some of the things he said were unacceptable, and he's got to strike a new tone. I think people like Paul Ryan are really important now to help shape the moral direction of the presidency. So I'm not saying everything's going to be fine. I'm right now encouraging people to chill out and calm down and relax, because I'm hoping that we're going to see the evolution from Donald Trump candidate to Donald Trump the president, and that that will necessitate a change in the way that he does things. Well, he's never going to stop being Donald Trump. All the ethics stuff doesn't go away. In fact, I believe he'll be going to court pretty soon, because the Trump University lawsuits are still ongoing. So all that stuff isn't going to go away. But we just have to hope that he now acts in a presidential manner and that he governs for all Americans.
What do you think the international reaction is going to be? I mean, we've talked before about how, you know, President Bush was perceived, particularly in Europe, how President Obama was viewed. I mean, is this seen as a joke, or do people take Trump seriously?
They take Trump seriously, and the international reaction has been hysterical, and something I will spend the next few weeks doing in Britain when I get back is, again, telling people to calm down and telling one or two people to shut up, because there have been some headlines and some articles and some TV documentaries which are so hysterical that they're irresponsible. I was outraged by a headline in the Daily Mirror, which is a very popular tabloid newspaper in Britain, which said, "Trump wins, experts predict World War III." And I think that's outrageous, because there are people reading this who genuinely are worried. There are kids who read these headlines too, who are asking questions about it. And I think to stoke those kinds of fears is going to add to the kind of social tensions that we've clearly got across the Western world. And I wish that some newspaper editors would just calm down and look at this rationally, and just remember some of those things that I've said, and also remember how the American Constitution works, that his powers will be divided, that he'll be scrutinized by the media, by the Democrats, by his own party. But unfortunately, right now, the world has hit the panic button.
Sure. Well, we're about out of time. It's always enjoy talking to you, Tim. I really appreciate you taking time. I know, and I'll look forward to continuing to follow your coverage of this development. Blessings to you and your ongoing work.
Thank you very much. Have a good weekend.
You too, as well. And we'll be back Monday by God's grace. Have a great rest of your day. Again, to all you veterans out there, those who have served, for families, for those who are now in harm's way, our prayers are with you. St. Martin of Tours, pray for us. This is Breadbox Media, and you've been listening to The Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.